Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with your host, executive editor of Newsbusters, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the amazing harmonic convergence as we wave farewell to the careers of Brian Williams and Jussie Smollett. On the very day Jussie was found guilty on 5 counts of hate crime hoaxing, MSNBC was celebrating the end of Brian Williams on his show, The 11th Hour. Nicole Wallace gushed, "Your contributions are too many to number. Oh, as many as the stars in the sky, Nicole." MSNBC staff historian Michael Beschloss demonstrated his utter lack of perspective. He said, "The genuine national emergency is that Brian Williams is leaving the 11th hour." Another journalist turned historian, John Meacham, called Brian Williams a fantastic person who will continue to be a gift to the country.
"I'm going to throw up. I think I'm going to throw
up.
All the nice dinner that I had. I'm going to throw it up."
Gross. I tweeted in response, "This is like celebrating the chef who gave a whole restaurant crowd food poisoning." But Williams wanted to leave with a patriotic mic drop. He sees a darkness on the edge of town. And you're supposed to get the reference, the Bruce Springsteen album reference. That was an album of his, Darkness on the Edge of Town. And they're both from New Jersey. Laying it on thick.
"The truth is, I'm not a liberal or a conservative. I'm an institutionalist. I believe in this place, and in my love of country, I yield to no one. But the darkness on the edge of town has spread to the main roads and highways and neighborhoods. It's now at the local bar and the bowling alley, at the school board and the grocery store."
There on his last show, Brian is still lying. He's not a liberal. He's an institutionalist. Well, his lies shook the institution that mysteriously decided to retain him. Like he actually is this precious gem of journalism that Michael Beschloss is adoring on television. This speech is Brian imagining himself giving the high five address at the end of Top Gun. One of the things that just perpetually annoys me about TV people is the way they can't have a private retirement party. Go to a nice restaurant, like everybody else. You want to retire somebody, get them a gold watch, say some nice words. But no, they have to do it on national TV. And they have to give a tribute to someone who is so undeserving of this kind of honor and glory. It's a victory lap for a fabulist like Janet Cook and Jason Blair. Where is their hour of celebration? I mean, these liberals pose as the champions of truth and justice and facts first. And then they turn around and celebrate Brian Williams as God's gift to television news. Naturally, NBC News celebrated the last show on their website. MSNBC President Rashida Jones had a statement. She said, "Williams broke countless major stories and attracted top journalists to his programs." Yeah, that means he attracted liberal journalists to his programs from major liberal news outlets like the New York Times or the Washington Post. And this story concluded with, oh, just this wee little note. Williams was suspended by the network for 6 months after he told an inaccurate story about his helicopter being hit by a rocket-propelled grenade. He admitted on the air that he had, quote, made a mistake in recalling the events of 12 years ago, unquote. That's what they posted. Like he made one mistake in his recall. It wasn't just riding on a helicopter that was hit by a missile. It was him being buddies with Navy SEALs who gave him souvenirs from getting Osama bin Laden. This is what he does. He dropped big self-aggrandizing lies for years, unpunished. Oh, did you know? He was at the Berlin Wall as it fell. I don't think Tom Brokaw saw him there. Tom Brokaw was the only TV journalist who was there on the scene. Brian Williams saw bodies floating by him in New Orleans. No. Yada, yada, yada. Lion Brian. And when he decides to spend more time with his family, this is he gets not just some, he gets the gold ring of praise all over national television. And the reality is, we are all replaceable. He is not a national emergency when he leaves. News anchors come and go. Nobody should think of themselves as that indispensable. You know, maybe if you're Michael Jordan, you know, maybe if you're Tom Brady, that would make it harder to replace. But the fact of the matter is, most of us are replaceable. And you want to say nice things when somebody goes, but this is not the right guy. And then, around the dinner hour, the jury unsurprisingly ruled Jussie Smollett was guilty on 5 of 6 counts of reporting falsely to the police. He not only reported falsely to the police, he reported falsely to a national media that took every lie and spread it across the country. But let's just focus for a minute on Facts First, CNN. A lot of conservative tweeters were focusing on Brian Stelter back in 2019. Even as the story was collapsing in Smollett's lap, Stelter was trying to say, oh, wait, it was too confusing to know what was true and what was false.
The narrative has once again changed from victim, to villain, back to victim. It's been very confusing. As Ryan was saying, people don't know what to believe, and we may never really know what happened on the street that night in Chicago. But for his fans, for his friends, this is a triumphant moment that he can now get back to what he wants to do, which is work.
Then Stelter doubled down on Twitter, trying to shame people. Were you there that night? Smollett's camp says he was the victim of a hate crime. The police dispute that. There isn't video of the alleged attack. Thus, we may never know what really happened. Yeah, that's cute. That's like Brian Stelter at the end of Elf. We'll never know whether Santa was really in Central Park. Come on, Brian. I mean, journalists, this is what you say you're so indispensable in doing. Find out what's true and what's false. And guess what? The video later did show. There's the two brothers. Oh, here's video of them buying bleach and rope. come on. And then after the verdict, out comes the reliably liberal, reliable sources newsletter. It's being written by Oliver Darcy this week. And this is just amazing. I mean, they should be humble at a time like this. They should be doing stories about, well, we all probably should have been more careful. We probably should have been more skeptical. We should have asked more questions. No. No, of course, Oliver Darcy started by quoting chyrons from the Hannity show and then screaming, "The tactic is dishonest yet simple. Take an actual act of deception, in this case, one that was perpetrated by an actor and covered heavily by the press, and then use it to suggest that anything reported by mainstream sources cannot be trusted. Everything is a hoax." Let's return once again that Brian Stelter wrote a whole book about Fox called Hoax, which kind of suggested that everything reported on Fox News is a hoax. These people have no ability to look at themselves. There's no introspection. They say stuff that sounds ridiculous, and they don't consider that they're sounding ridiculous. The Jussie Smollett story is a warning. This is the kind of thing that undermines the credibility of the media. They should take it seriously. They should not come in after this verdict and try to somehow suggest it's unfair to say the press did a bad job. And joining us now on the Newsbusters podcast, from Florida, Jorge Bonilla, the director of MRC Latino. Welcome, friend.
Thank you, friend. It's great to be back.
This week, MRC Latino reported that both Telemundo and Univision championed efforts in the People's Republic of California to become a sanctuary state for women seeking abortions. Now, liberals hate it when red states talk about sanctuary states for gun ownership, but this is their kind of federalism. And Kathleen Crumhansel wrote for MRC Latino, failing to see the irony between their endorsement for killing the babies of low-income Hispanic mothers versus the network's adamant pro-life stance when it comes to the pregnant migrants crossing the border illegally. The journalists at both Telemundo and Univision pitched the free abortion sale mercilessly. And she told me about how she's watching this on TV, this sort of B-roll video of a pregnant woman stroking her tummy right in the middle of a story about California's wondrous pro-abortion stance. I mean, that's a little bit of cognitive dissonance, eh?
Look, there's a big moral hazard, Tim, with these networks when, in order to build their business model, going back a little bit here, they've had to promote a constant open border. And what happens is, in the process of promoting that constant open border policy, they tend to promote politicians and policies that will grant that open border policy. And what happens is that they end up co-opting the entirety of the left's policy poo-poo platter, if you will.
Yeah.
including abortion, which they're very big on.
Yeah.
So it's a weird, you know, situation where they end up championing wholeheartedly abortion policy. Univision in the past was a Maggie Award winner, for example, which was the award that used to be named after
Margaret Sanger.
Exactly, after Margaret Sanger. Planned Parenthood, due to their championing of abortion policy. Univision has long been a champion of abortion policy. Telemundo has as well. So, yeah, they were a little bit too gleeful almost in promoting California becoming an abortion sanctuary, and that is why. And Kathleen rightly makes that point that if, you know, you have someone who's pregnant and loses their baby as they're crossing the Rio Grande into the U.S., or the baby dies while they're in ICE custody or something, the networks will make a big stink about that.
Yeah, classic.
They'll make a big stink about that. And, oh my God, you know, this is someone who, you know, if it's a fetus that's aborted on U.S. soil, they're okay with that. But if it's a migrant fetus en route to crossing into the U.S., they have a problem with that. That's sort of the inconsistency and the moral hazard that you see with these networks.
You know, it sort of reminds me, I was just remembering this as you talked, is that Rachel Maddow had this big, as she does, one of these long unfurling pro-abortion sermons about some guy in the immigration system who was monitoring to make sure that abortions weren't taking place among the illegal aliens in custody or in their facilities. And, you know, that was an atrocity. You know, how dare you not let illegal alien women go out and get their abortions in America? I mean, I guess that's the benefits of liberty. But it is intriguing because, as she suggested, this is the natural audience for these networks aren't necessarily big champions of abortion.
No, they're not.
And she did report, actually, we should know, Kathleen reported back on December 1, Univision actually, counter to their usual trend, gave some time to the pro-life side.
It was strange how these things happened. It was a report on the Supreme Court hearing where the post-15-week ban was discussed, and it was reported, and they were covering that. This one report that came out on Univision after, like right after the hearings, they have a midday newscast that came out live. And the way things lined up, that report happened to be all pro-life. the Latino Engagement Director of National Right to Life came on, mm-hmm, and did like a 5-6-7 minute hit. Our friend Mario Diaz, who's the general counsel for Concerned Women of America, did a live hit from the Supreme Court. on Univision. And the anchor, Carolina Sarasa, when she was interviewing the engagement director from National Right to Life, she said, quote, the fetus at 12 weeks can feel things. It can dream. What would it say if it were able to speak and have a voice? And then that one, in a matter of 10, 15, 20 seconds, a Univision anchor recognized the inherent humanity and sentience of a 12-week-old fetus, which is something that you never, ever, ever see on Spanish language TV here in the United States.
Yeah, I think
it was amazing to behold.
Yeah, I mean, because Kathleen's piece on the abortion sanctuary state, I think there's like seven links of, you know, the constant things the MRC Latino has been doing on how pro-abortion they are.
There's a history. Like I said, there's a history because they want to provide material support to politicians that may grant an open border or the most lax and friendly, migrant-friendly immigration policy. They will end up supporting those other things on the policy ledger, like abortion, like gun control, like environmental policy, the Green New Deal. Like I said, the whole policy poo-poo platter, they will line up behind it and champion it gleefully if it means keeping in place an open border.
Well, now let's look at this. Chris Saliza at CNN's very alarmed. The Hispanics are not trending in the direction of the Democrats. New polling from the Wall Street Journal suggests that the 2020 numbers where Hispanics moved to the right, the trend continues. Asked whether they would vote for a Democrat or Republican candidate for Congress in 2022, Latinos were split right down the middle, 37-37. Asked who they could vote for if the 2024 race was held today, 44% Biden, 43% Trump. Now, that's just got to drive them insane.
That number is indicative of a bloodbath. If I'm a liberal and I'm looking at 2022, that number is giving me nightmares. But the scariest number of all, in that Wall Street Journal poll, they polled about Biden's performance today, his approval ratings today, and Hispanic women split 46-46. That right there, when they swung for him, I think it was a plus 25 number. Mm. It was comparable to Black women almost in terms of the high favorability for Joe Biden. Was a Hispanic women split, and now they're up to even. That is a nightmare for the left. It is a huge nightmare. And just today, or yesterday rather, Rui Teixeira, that's a name from the past. If you remember, he wrote an item called, I think, Demographics is Destiny, about how Hispanics were going to be a part of this demographic wave that was going to take over the country, and shift politics forever. And it was Hispanics were going to be the cornerstone of this emergent and permanent Democratic majority. Rui Teixeira has reversed himself. And he wrote a new item out in his Substack called The Democratic's Hispanic Voter Problem. So now he has reversed himself. He has seen the trends. He has seen the data sets. He has seen Republicans gaining ground, not just in Florida, not just in Texas, but in places like Georgia, in places like Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in places like the South Bronx. And it's now there is a panic on the left. When you see these numbers, when you see the blow up of a term like Latinx.
Oh, let's get to that. You know,
yes.
One of your favorites, Jorge.
Oh, my
Fernanda Mondi, Democrat pollster, told Politico, the numbers suggest that using Latinx is a violation of the political Hippocratic Oath, which is first to do no electoral harm. Why are we using a word that is preferred by only 2%, but offends as many as 40% of those voters we want to win?
I will tell you this about Fernanda Mondi. On matters of policy, there is little or nothing that I may agree with him with, but in terms of this, if he goes out and polls it, guys, take it to the bank. And here's a guy, a Democratic pollster, who's committed to electing Democrats, who is screaming at the top of his lungs, drop this obnoxious term. Because that's what it is. It was an imposition. And I tweeted this out earlier this morning. Latinx is easy to dunk on. We laugh and we have a good time with it and we dunk on it. But the original sin was not Latinx, but it's boomer parent Latino 40 years ago. That was a problem when an identity, a little label was created with which to shove in a bunch of people from disparate places of origin and under one box, under one banner, centered around language. That was a problem. And that is what engendered Latinx, which we dunk on today. And it's absolutely blown up in the left's face. Identity politics with regard to Hispanics has absolutely blown up in the left's face.
Yeah, Amandi said that 30% of voters were less likely to support a politician or a political organization that uses Latinx. Somebody on Twitter was noticing that Gawker was trying to start Italianx. They were like reporting on Chris Cuomo and trying to start Italianx, like Fetch, you know, Fetch is not catching on.
Fetch is not going to happen. Stop making it trying to happen. It's not going to happen. I've seen it all. I've seen Philippinex, Italianx, Indianx. I've seen it all. I've seen it all. Spanish is a gendered language. That is where Latino came from, Latino and Latina. Spanish is a gendered language, and the gender-neutral term is going to be the male possessive in many instances. Like Latino is supposed to be the gender-inclusive term.
Right.
But when academia wants to take these things into a laboratory, into their little identity politics laboratory, mm-hmm. and concoct umbrella terms with which to impose upon people, then you get Latinx, which was really supposed to be like a little cool kids kind of thing that they would use amongst themselves, but it broke out into the mainstream. You've got Steven Spielberg when he was casting for West Side Story saying, "I only want people coming from Latinx countries of origin."
Oh boy.
I tweeted out a handy map of Latinx countries of origin, which really, it only showed the United States.
Well, why didn't he just say it's a movie about Puerto Ricans, so you have to be from Puerto Rico or something?
That was another flap too, because the lead is Colombian. So it caused an issue. And there are people that write these little pieces about representation and, oh my God, why didn't he hire it? Look, I don't care.
Yeah, but they did this with, what was the movie? I think it was Raya and the Last Dragon, which was an animated movie that Disney made. And they were unhappy because they weren't the right kind. The voice actors were Asian, but they weren't the right territory of Asian. And that's where you're just like, yeah, you're getting crazy. I wanted to get to a guy named Edwin Pitty of Univision.
Yes.
They were touting the so-called Build Back Better bill. They were touting the radical protests, but reporting on the amnesty provisions that the Democrats are trying to pass. He listed the protections against deportation for 10 years, getting them a driver's license, as well as access to federal health care. But the main problem is that this Plan C that's in there does not include that pathway to citizenship that they all want. And it just strikes me as funny that stricken a lot of people funny, the way that advocates for illegal immigrants and the illegal immigrant activists themselves, run around and sort of order the Democrats about how to do things.
Well, remember, Univision, much more so than Telemundo. And Telemundo is sort of in a safe space because they are ultimately a corporate subsidiary of NBC Comcast. But Univision is much more enthralled to these left-wing activists, to these immigration activists. This was something that we've been on since the beginning of the Biden administration. When you had a couple of activists that came on Univision and said it point blank, hey, we want them to use reconciliation. We've been watching this, and they've been harping on this since February, where they said explicitly, we want them to stuff immigration reform via reconciliation in some bill, and it ended up being the infrastructure bill.
Yeah, I guess I wanted to mention this. This is kind of what I was referring to. He said, our community does not want to settle. And of course, they want to ignore the Senate parliamentarian and just shove it down the throats of the Senate.
Right. You know, they started this with the first bill, which was the first immigration package was supposed to be for Dreamers and for farm workers and for, certain TPS holders. About 5.5-6 million people were supposed to get their pathway to citizenship. They presented it to the parliamentarian. She shot it down. So this is way too broad a policy change to be done via the budgetary reconciliation process.
Yeah, it's supposed to be about spending. I mean, supposed to be about a spending bill, not about all kinds of other policies.
You're not supposed to enact social change via these different spending mechanisms. And then they went again. So now they're on their third bite of the apple, and Univision is part of the problem, where they're actively pressing and really giving substance and giving credence to these voices that say, hey, subvert the democratic process, violate Senate rules, overrule the parliamentarian. They insist, well, the Democrats have all the power. They have the House, they have the White House, and they have all the power because they have the tie-breaking vote with Kamala Harris in the Senate. And, you know, Univision has indulged these activists, and now you see them really becoming the activists.
Yeah,
I mean, parroting their takes, and that's what it's become.
This is the problem, you know, that they're unwilling to acknowledge, and that is there's no difference between journalist and activist. There's no difference between the notion that somebody would just report the facts is utterly missing. Which brings me to one last thing I wanted to ask you as a Floridian. This squabble between Sarah Silverman and Joy Reid, because Joy Reid was trying to say, Ron DeSantis starting a state guard in Florida was fascist-y bananas. And Sarah Silverman just sort of mildly said, I don't think you read the CNN article, because the CNN article said that, well, 23 other states have a state guard, including New York and California, which don't seem like fascist states to most liberals. So it's, What's the internal politics in Florida? Is there something that these people are all missing? Just trying to go after DeSantis like he is the other Trumpian threat in 24.
Well, look, DeSantis derangement syndrome is real and it is spectacular. And this is yet the latest instance of what you'll see where, you know, if any other state enacts what is a normal policy proposal, people are fine with it. They go about their business. Everything's okay. But if Ron DeSantis does it, everybody loses their minds. So you have this thing where, yes, the Florida State Guard, it would assist with all different kinds of things. They would not be armed. But because it's DeSantis, the left is suggesting that these would be death squads.
Yeah, Charlie Crist was saying secret police.
Charlie Crist is trying to dog whistle. When you say secret police in Florida,
yeah,
okay, that's and because you asked about Florida things, that's a big dog whistle to try and scare the Venezuelan community, mm-hmm. and the Cuban exile community, where in those countries you do have a secret police.
I was going to say Pinochet is what I was hearing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, in Venezuela especially, you have what's called the FAES, the F-A-E-S, where they come out in the dead of night and they'll snatch people and either kill them and disappear them or take them into these secret prisons. And you see a lot of that in these countries. So what the left was trying to do evocatively was tie DeSantis to these authoritarian regimes in South America. Because again, anything that DeSantis does is automatically authoritarian in the eyes of the left.
I mean, I assume this was something that it's an all volunteer force for things like hurricanes. I mean,
hurricane assistance, disaster relief. You know, we do live in the path of hurricanes here in Florida. That's a thing sometimes, and you know, the National Guard it can be overextended at times if you have overseas contingencies and you have hurricanes and you have In some other states, you have civil unrest, and you have, you know, whatever else have you, COVID, if they're helping out with COVID and with vaccine implementation. So you need, you know, the governor saw fit to reactivate this card, and people lost their minds.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of imagination there. So I guess when you say it's in some sort of all-volunteer force they're hearing, you know,
all volunteer and unarmed.
Kyle Rittenhouse. They're hearing Kyle Rittenhouse crossing state lines into Florida with an AR-15 is probably what Joy Reid is imagining.
Oh,
I mean, yeah. as long as Joy Reid's going to imagine this about DeSantis, we can imagine what's going on in her brain.
It's
scary as that sounds.
I don't want to imagine what's going on in her brain. But look, it's the media are deranged. They are deranged. They continue to be deranged. The national media does not really know how to handle or how to wrap its arms around Ron DeSantis and what he's done in terms of vaccine response, in terms of engaging national media, in terms of managing the economy of a large state. And it shows. And these overreactions are simply a part of that.
Well, and then, you know, I really wanted to wrap up. I got one more last thought, which is, yes, we saw the last poll where Greg Abbott's up like 12 points on Beto. So all of their hopes and dreams, the Democrats in these states, that they're going to turn Texas blue or that they're going to beat DeSantis with Val Demings or whatever. I mean, it's not looking good.
The Beto thing, it just... I was pleased, extremely thrilled to see that. And it goes back to, you know, you tie all these things together. It does come back to the Latinx issue. It really does.
Yeah. I mean, Beto is basically saying we shouldn't have a border.
We shouldn't have a border. And yes, we're coming for your AR-15s. Good luck with that in Texas.
Yeah.
And, you know, I saw the poll and it's like I told somebody. And look, I just want to tie one point in. And in talking about the Latinx thing and the Hispanic underperformance with Democrats, you see a lot of pieces coming out in the media about Spanish language disinformation.
Yes.
Check this out for timing, but a piece just dropped on Spanish language disinformation in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And it dropped the day before this Q poll came out with showing Beto's numbers and showing just how badly he's going to get squashed in Texas. So go figure that, you know, in response to Joe Biden losing Florida, there was this whole run of pieces on Spanish language disinformation. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, people are saying terrible things. Now they're starting in Texas. And Democrats are losing ground with Hispanics nationwide without even their existing a national Spanish language conservative media ecosystem.
Mm.
There's no Fox News en Español.
Right.
For example, there isn't a Rush Limbaugh in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't any of that. Really, the only thing in place, you have a couple of outlets and you've got MRC Latino sort of calling out what the media does and exposing the gaps in coverage by showing what they cover and what they don't cover on the news side. Just imagine if there were that kind of Spanish language ecosystem in place, where things would be at.
It's an intriguing thought. I think that the thing that's so disturbing and frustrating is this whole assumption that when the Democrats lose, democracy is losing. And when the Democrats lose, it must be the fault of disinformation, not actual information. It's the arrogance in all that is just so baked in. And the baking is very unappetizing. But thank you, Jorge, our expert in all things Latino, Florida, DeSantis, and probably Major League Baseball.
Probably. Well, we'll see. We'll see what the Yankees offseason looks like. I'm not hardened.
Is there an
right
offseason?
Now.
I don't. I think
well,
they're
all
no
banned season right now. But the Yankees have done nothing, and I am disgusted at this Yankees offseason. But we'll see what happens after the lockout.
I'm a Brewers guy. I never get disgusted by offseasons because it's really what matters in the season. But thank you, Jorge. Thank you for listening today at the Newsbusters podcast. Come see us once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks.